Despite her troubles, Corrine Brown says she's running for re-election. Marco Rubio speaks out on the Senate floor about Jacksonville's troubled Eureka Garden, and there will be no high-flying Confederate flag on the city's northwest side. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live on the radio, and make sure to watch our video partner, TVJax.com. Just ahead, all the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. Then later, we'll tell you what the city has going on to celebrate Earth Day. It's today. And later, the Gullah Geechee Ring Shouters. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first, it's Friday and time for our weekly roundtable. Here today, Claire Goforth, editor at Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
Larry Hannon, reporter with the Florida Times Union.
Good to be here.
A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics.
Good morning.
And our own WJCT analyst, John Burr.
Thanks, Melissa.
So good to have you all with us. Plenty of news to discuss, from a Confederate flag getting shot down to Mayor Curry cracking down on one notorious local pension. We'll tell you about that. But first, this morning, embattled North Florida Congresswoman Corrine Brown says she's running for re-election once again. At the same time, former Duval Sheriff John Rutherford is the leading contender to replace our other representative in Congress, Andrew Crenshaw, who's retiring. We begin the hour with a closer look at both races and what the flux of the congressional seats means for our corner of Florida. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Claire Goforth, let's begin with you. Corrine Brown ending the uncertainty Wednesday when she said she'll run for re-election, even though her district has been redrawn. She lost the battle over that, and she also faces a House ethics investigation.
Yeah, I don't think it's really any great surprise that Corrine Brown is not willing to go quietly into that good night. It will be an uphill battle for her in some respect to win this bid for re-election. You know, incumbents always have a bit of an advantage, so that will work in her favor. But she's got to sway a whole new crop of voters who are not familiar with her outside of the headlines, and I don't really think that goes in her favor.
Larry Hannon, this also puts the damper on some around town who had hoped to succeed Corrine Brown in that seat if she decided not to stand for re-election again.
Yeah, but I think everyone knows that Corrine Brown is either going to have to be voted out or she's going to have to die to leave that seat. I never for a second thought she was going to voluntarily leave Congress. And, you know, people forget she's a very good retail politician. I still think she's the favorite to get reelected unless she gets indicted.
A.G. Gankarski.
Yeah, let's talk about it. You used the phrase end uncertainty. I don't know if she's ended the uncertainty at all. I mean, Corrine Brown's saying that she's going to file. Well, if she doesn't file, you know, it's a meaningless statement. Al Lawson has a lot of name recognition. The farther west of Jacksonville you get, Corrine Brown, once you get west of, say, Baldwin, doesn't have name recognition. She doesn't have that political machine. She doesn't have the politicians and the operatives and the hangers-on she's cultivated for 2.5 decades. You know, these are real factors. Also, she hasn't been fundraising because she's been up in the air. Also, she's been saying things about how Jacksonville and North Florida have nothing in common. Al Lawson is a competent, lifelong politician who will use that stuff in mailers, in advertisements, in speeches. So, you know, Corrine Brown, yeah, we've seen her run against the Bum of the Month Club every 2 years since 1992. And, you know, so we think she's impervious. She's not impervious. She's got to convince a new crop of voters. She's not going to have her quick pick. She's not going to have her setup. She's not going to have, you know, her hands in the pockets of these politicians. So Corrine Brown, you know, despite the legal trouble that she's been facing that we've kind of forgotten about because of this whole will or she won't she file, you know, she's got fighting for political life against a politician we can't underestimate.
Now, let's talk about the other seat. As AG so aptly pointed out, Corrine Brown's seat has been drawn for many years to be a very safe Democratic seat. On the other hand,
it's Blue Dog now.
The other seat in Congress has been drawn to be a very safe Republican seat. And of course, the Fair Districts process that the state went through was supposed to make these seats more competitive for both parties. That hasn't really happened in our area. John Burr, it looks as though former Sheriff John Rutherford is the heavy favorite to replace Andrew Crenshaw, who held his seat in Congress for decades as well and really faced no threat to his reelection bids either.
Well, Rutherford certainly is the consensus pick among the party stalwarts. There's no question about that. And that, you know, that's going to be a hard one for anyone who would like to challenge him for that seat. He was, you know, his term is two terms, I guess, as sheriff. We're pretty good. I mean, pretty solid. And people have a pretty favorable impression of him over those years. So that, I won't say that's sewn up, but it's getting sewn. Now, just to get back to Corrine for a second, you know, I agree with a lot of what has been said, but I have to remember, you know, that the political graveyard of North Florida is littered with people who underestimated Corrine Brown over the years. And she is resilient. If the Department of Justice decides to move on her, then that throws everything up in the air in my book. But short of that, I wouldn't count her out.
And remember, Al Lawson has lost multiple races for Congress over in Tallahassee. So he may be a competent candidate, but I think you may need more than competence to knock Corrine Brown off.
Mm-hmm. Claire.
Yeah, and you know, it's a little bit disappointing to me that, what, 2 weeks after Ander decides not to run again, we're already saying, calling it for Rutherford. I mean,
it's not the most competitive process if certain people have already anointed their chosen successor.
It certainly isn't. I mean, part of that has to do with the amount of money that is in politics. In order to mount a successful campaign, you need to do so much fundraising that unless you have the money backers in your pocket, then you really aren't going to be able to win. There's just very little opportunity for a populist candidate, you know, such as a Bill Bishop type, to come out of nowhere and win the election.
I don't know why we maintain the fiction that these congressional races are sort of populist hotbed. They never are, and they're not intended to be. John Rutherford has the trust of the money people of Lenny Curry, has the trust of Lenny Curry, and he has mowed down the opposition. Jay Fant got out of the race. Jerry Holland, despite saying he had $500,000 with which he was going to stake himself, quietly got out of the race.
So a couple of dozen people with a lot of money, a big bank account, and some influence want this candidate, and it doesn't seem to matter that the 100,000 people.
I mean, you can take this to the national. Wait a minute, you can take this to the national level and talk about why both Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders have tapped into this incredible anger and frustration with the system as it is currently set up. And you are discussing that at the micro level, at the local level.
If someone's going to knock off John Rutherford, it's not going to be Jay Fant. It's not going to be Jerry Holland. It's going to be someone we've never heard of before who runs a populist campaign. None of those people are populist.
There are two people filed. Bill McClure, who's the St. Johns County Commissioner, who, you know, had an interesting news item where he had some sort of weird transaction with that business partner up in North Carolina he had to resolve. He almost got arrested for that. McClure's a Tea Party type. He's kind of got a 1,000-yard stare going. Deborah Katz-Puchel, she's also running. She runs every 2 years for the seat. She's had the same brochures for 14 years, and she's another Tea Party type. So there are alternatives if you want to vote for them. But John Rutherford's the guy with the credibility. He's got the backing. He's got the record. And unless Lake Ray decides to get in and run against him, John Rutherford's going to be it.
Oh, why have an election at all? Let's just give him the seat now.
He's
why
got
not?
The political IOUs, too.
Yeah. But Rutherford's he was also the sheriff of the murder capital of Florida. I mean, the negative ads kind of write themselves if you have someone competent to run against them.
But nobody with money and muscle will put those ads on television. And as we've discussed over and over again, in Florida, to win, you have to win on television. You have to have a lot of money to put up blanketed political ads 24 hours a day leading up to the election. And I think that's what Claire is getting at, is the frustration with that process has corrupted what the original intent of the Founding Fathers was.
The original intent of the Founding Fathers, I mean, the Founding Fathers restricted suffrage, you know, as long as they could. You know, African Americans, no
suffrage.
That's
true. That's
women,
also true.
No suffrage.
But at the same time, is it, and I put this to all of you, is the benchmark for being a member of Congress the ability to raise the most money and run the most TV ads?
Yes.
It would appear to be yes. And that, I think, a lot of people have a problem
with. That's a part of it, but Rutherford also has political IOUs out there. Curry owes in large part owes his win to Rutherford. And Rutherford's played the game of politics very well over all the years he's been in office here. He's a very well respected guy. Yeah, he's going to raise a lot of money, but he's going to raise a lot of money in part because people really like him.
And he's also going to co-brand with the pension tax referendum. And, you know, FloridaPolitics.com did a poll. Rutherford, 49% choice, even before he got in a race. Favorable, 66% with Republican voters. Unfavorable, 14%. Those are hard numbers to erode in a couple months. And, you know, a smart politician is not going to get in the race and lose by 20 points. And, you know, Rutherford, there have been head-to-head polls conducted with him and people like John Delaney. John Delaney, in those polls that I've heard about, 20 points behind, you know, Rutherford. So I don't know who the credible candidate is who's going to emerge. Yeah, maybe there's going to be a local Trump, but I doubt it because Lenny Curry is going to have John Rutherford beside him every time he talks about the pension tax until April or August 30th.
Melissa, I thought your point on the parallels with the national race are right on. I mean, Jeb Bush was the John Rutherford pick nationally for the Republican Party. He was the guy who was all set up by the big guys to win. But you know what? That didn't happen.
This is a very angry electorate, and it's the Republicans who are angrier than the Democrats right now in some ways. So even though I would agree Rutherford is by far the favorite, I wouldn't be selecting drapes yet in D.C.
Let's go to your calls, Ed. Always a lively discussion on this show, which is what we like about it, and we want your calls at 549-2937. Tom on the West Side. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to rain a little bit on the Rutherford parade, point out that all his professional career, the man has had a position where he's been able to do his job by order and decree. He has, like, no experience building consensus, which is basically what it is he has the exact opposite skill set as what you need to be successful in Congress. And furthermore, let's also remember, he wasn't all that successful as a sheriff. We've become the murder capital under his tenure. And gang activity really went out of control while he was on his watch.
Thanks for the call. Tom?
Well, you can't really blame Rutherford for the gang problem, I wouldn't say. I mean, the sheriff has some role in that, but it's just so many factors that contribute to it. And as John was saying, I mean, we'd been the murder capital before Rutherford, my understanding.
But we remained the murder capital all through his tenure.
We did, and it's an excellent
point.
That
is part of the record.
That is. And
part of the record is the level of crime went way down during Rutherford. When Rutherford was here, overall crime went way down, as it did across the country. Is Rutherford responsible for that? Probably not, but he can sort of take credit for it.
What about the caller's other point that if you're an authoritarian guy who's used to, you know, giving commands and orders and having thousands of people in the agency you control do your bidding, how does that work in Congress?
I'm very curious if he gets there. I'm very curious to see how he handles that because the caller's basically right. Rutherford has never been a legislator before. He's never had to round up people to support a bill. You know, he's going to show up, he's going to become a senior citizen in his first term in Congress. Is this something he really wants to do?
On the other hand, AG, as you pointed out, he has built consensus locally and has been skilled at building those kinds of relationships that you would assume he would need to translate.
Right. I mean, I got to take exception with things like the characterization of Rutherford as authoritarian, the characterization of Rutherford as not being able to build consensus, because in fact he has built consensus. If it weren't for John Rutherford, we still have Alvin Brown as mayor. That's a fact, because John Rutherford made the case that Alvin Brown couldn't get the job done and we needed Lenny Curry. That's why Lenny Curry is in there. That's the reality. You know, so you look at John Rutherford, he's a very skilled politician. He's very good at talking to the media. If you call him, he calls you back. John Rutherford is going to go to Washington. What he's going to do is he's going to represent Northeast Florida in such a way that, you know, he brings things home and he actually builds a continuum, you know, from Ander to Tilly Fowler to Charlie Bennett. He's going to make that seat work. And the other candidates in the race, Bill McClure, Deborah Pushell, you know, whoever else gets in from Nassau or St. John's County, they're not going to be able to build that consensus. And you're going to see John Rutherford on your TV screen with earned media for the next 3 months. And, you know, that's going to be the ballgame.
Speaking of politicians, we want your calls as we discuss other news of the week at 549-2937. Senator Marco Rubio isn't done with his Senate term yet, even though he's out of the presidential race. And he spoke about the problems facing Eureka Garden in Jacksonville, up in Washington Thursday, calling for changes to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development's inspection process. The Westside apartment complex continues to be an ongoing scandal in this city, owned by the Tennessee-based Global Ministries Foundation, which has come under the microscope for its ongoing failure to fix the problems, the unsafe living conditions there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Claire.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know what will fail the HUD inspection, because they passed in February with insects, decaying stairs, damaged appliances, 74 units that still have mold. So I'm wondering how you do fail that inspection.
I also wonder if when Marco Rubio took the floor, if anyone in the Senate looked at him and said, who is that? Because it's been quite a while since he's been on the Senate floor. But it was good he spoke out about it. It's certainly something that needs attention.
Yeah, it's nice to see that, because there's just this inability to fix the problems that's gone through several mayoral administrations. And mayors, especially the current mayor, have been leaning on the feds to do something.
You know, the irony here is that the more people talk about how horrible Eureka Gardens is, and it is, the harder it's going to be to find another buyer for the property to take it over, which is, I guess, what people want. They don't think the ministry is doing a very good job. So, you know, yes, need to bring these things to light. But man, when everybody's talking about what a trashy place it is, you know, who's going to buy it?
Well, there are a couple points to bring up here. First of all, regarding Rubio on the Senate floor, Lenny Curry goes up to D.C. next week to meet with Julian Castro, the HUD secretary, to talk about the Global Ministries properties, Eureka Garden, Washington Heights, which has been in the news this week for good reason. You know, Washington Heights had their spot blown up on TV4 News. And, you know, somehow they got a new laundry room this week after TV4 News reported on, you know, the issues at Washington Heights, which are just as bad as Eureka Gardens, just as bad as Cleveland Arms, and so on. Denise Hunt on this show talked about it a few weeks back. So, you know, Rubio is setting the stage for that. You know, but the reality is this, with the Global Ministries Foundation properties, you know, financing was shaky. It was done under the Alvin Brown administration. It was not done through proper channels. Alvin Brown overread the process. And, you know, you've got to ask yourself, these properties are 50 years old. They're probably teardowns at this point. You know, no amount of rehab is really going to fix them. And the HUD process is such that, you know, they've got people routing these properties or else. We've got plenty of apartment complexes throughout the city that take Section 8 vouchers. There needs to be a more creative approach to moving people to properties that would not be condemned if, you know, government weren't conveniently looking the other way, as Claire said.
It would also be worth wondering if Julian Castro is Hillary's vice presidential nominee, as some people think. Could Eureka Gardens suddenly get national attention? That wouldn't surprise me if it did.
It Chuck at the beaches. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to comment on John Rutherford. Two or three years ago, I called into this program, and John Rutherford was at the end of his talk, and I couldn't get in, and he said, to leave your number. So three or four days later, I'm at work, and at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, my phone rings, and it's John Rutherford. He stayed on the phone with me for 5 minutes, answering my question. He didn't ask me to vote for him. He didn't ask me anything. He was just very kind, very cordial, and took his time in the middle of his day to answer my question. So I just wanted to say that from that perspective, I think he got my vote, and he did a great job as far as I'm concerned with this share. Thank you.
Well, maybe he should call all the voters for 5 minutes and talk to them. But I want to circle back to AG's point, you know, blaming Alvin Brown for the problems at Eureka Garden.
He financed it.
I really don't think that it's fair to blame him for an issue that's actually a national issue. We're looking at, there's properties all over the country where the conditions are deplorable, and the companies that own these are taking money from the taxpayers for, you know, these low-income housing. And this part of this is feeding into the anger of the electorate, because the poor quite rightly see that they are being taken advantage of by companies like Global Ministries that want no more than to pad their own pockets at the expense of the poor.
Let's not talk grad school about this. Let's talk factual. The facts are this. Alvin Brown circumvented the process with the Jacksonville Housing Finance Authority, and he went around the process. Alvin Brown went up there, you know, month after month for community empowerment days, where he somehow didn't see the mold, didn't see the rusting stairs, didn't see the issues.
And mayors before him didn't see the mold or the rusting
stairs.
This goes way back.
Yes, but Alvin Brown did the financing of this issue. Alvin Brown is the reason that Global Ministries Foundation owns this property. That is fact.
The Eureka Gardens was a disaster long before Alvin Brown. He is at best a minor player in this. He is not the reason Eureka Gardens is a problem right now.
He signed the check.
I think that they tried to hand it off to Global Ministries to fix the problems, and they didn't get fixed.
And Global Ministries has had issues in other
And they've had issues
areas.
All over the Southeast.
Yeah. So maybe Alvin Brown's to blame for the issues they've had in Tennessee
look at Memphis, where basically Memphis had the same issue, and Memphis housing bonds were done municipally. The state won't honor those bonds, and now the housing bond market in Memphis is tanked. That is reality. If Alvin Brown had done due diligence, Global Ministries Foundation would not be, you know, in that situation today.
But the Eureka Gardens would be just as bad as it is now. It would just be owned by someone else.
Well, maybe so, but, you know, Jacksonville Housing Finance, you know, Authority basically insisted upon, you know, a vetting process that was not done. That
Max,
is the reality.
Max emails the show, meanwhile, taking issue with, I think it was AG that said, Sheriff Rutherford is great with the media. He used to appear on this show every month, so we were always happy to welcome him, and he was always a great guest. But Max writes the show, Rutherford took away the police scanners from local newsrooms. He was horrible with the media. We didn't have scanners in this newsroom. I know you did at the Times Union.
We did. He took them away. I would not agree with the concept that Rutherford was always great with the media. He was professional, but he was not – let's just say if you called him, you were not – usually getting a call back that day or even the next day.
All right. Calls. Well, you know what? We need to talk about other things. I know we could talk about this stuff all day, but we need to mention that Mayor Curry on Thursday ordered an immediate end to the controversial pension benefits being paid out to John Keene, the retired Jacksonville Police and Fire Pension Fund executive who became the public face of the city's pension problems. And his lavish pension, which would have amounted to $187,000 a year, has been cut back significantly. I think that will definitely go over well with most folks. John Burr?
Oh, well, sure. I mean, you know, Keene is public enemy number one as far as the taxpayers are concerned. You know, this is necessary window dressing. That's the way I look at it. He had to do this in order, and it helps him sell his pension vote in August. If he hadn't done it, that would have been it would have been thrown up in his face as, why haven't you cut out this extra money for John Keene? So he really had to do it. It's a good window dressing move for him.
And I got the number wrong. Keene would have gotten $234,000. He's been cut back to $187,000.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I understand NPR's next pledge drive will be to give John Keene some money rather than themselves.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm
not going to be on that one.
You know, this is low-hanging. This is low-hanging fruit. You know, there's a decent chance that when Keene sues, he will get his full pension back. But quite frankly, this is, from a purely political standpoint, this was such an obvious move for Curry to make that it had to happen.
This is not an obvious move for him to make, because it would have been made already if that had been the case. You know, I talked to Curry. I talked to Jason Gabriel, the general counsel, yesterday, and here's what happened. You know, Curry authorized last week the general counsel to basically do a study. Well, can they cut the benefits? A 7-page letter came forth. It was scathing. It basically talked about how Curry had the authority to adjust benefit levels if he wanted to. And Curry, in fact, did that. I talked to Lenny Curry. He said, well, I'm a process guy. I looked at the decision, and it was the decision. And, you know, when I asked him, well, are you worried about legal action from the Police and Fire Pension Fund? You know, Curry said, well, let them sue. Curry is not worried. I talked to Beth McKeag, you know, the executive director of the Police and Fire Pension Fund, at least for the next little while. She didn't see this coming. You know, Lenny Curry basically scored a political victory. And, you know, he told me that this is no longer business as usual in the executive branch, where they play footsie with, you know, the public pension. This is a new day. And, you know, this is something that you can take it as word or not, but this is something that had not been done previously, and it's a corrective measure that is going to play well with the voters.
It's a political move, and it's a smart move, even if he loses. Even if he loses the inevitable lawsuit, there is no downside.
How can you say he's going to lose the lawsuit?
One second. Linda in Deerwood, go ahead, Linda.
I listen to you every day, and I always like to listen to the Friday Roundup. I'm not quite sure the format, but AG is doing a great job today, being a cheerleader for all things Republican and establishment. And I know that, you know, your jobs are to give us your opinion, sometimes unbiased and not. It's just, I'm glad he has the inside track and he can illuminate us on how great Curry is, how great John Rutherford is, even though we never knew about gangs. They were forbidden to mention the word gangs until just before he left the sheriff's office. So I would love that we could all just have a real deal. You know, if you are an advocate for these guys, if you're a media specialist for these guys, just say it, because I'm listening to get unbiased analysis from the parties who get information and to try to make an informed decision what games are being played behind the scenes. But instead, I'm getting cheerleaders of the games that are going on. This is all window dressing, and we know it because Lenny Curry was the head of the Republican Party, and he has an affinity for things that don't appear to be level. Yeah, I just appreciate the analysis. Just let us know where you guys all stand with the backstory of your, you know, affinity for these individuals we're discussing this morning. Thanks.
I think the point the caller is making is speaking to a larger issue, and forgive me for the grad school analysis, but I mean, people are fed up with the media, and it's a popular sounding point. They, you know, they have the perception that we're all biased, and we do all have our opinions, but, you know, I just think that it's just part of that media resentment is what she's expressing.
I'd like to address it because I was called out on that call for about a minute. You know, fact is, I'm talking to these people. I'm up at City Hall. I'm talking to Lenny Curry. I'm talking to Jason Gabriel, talking to John Rutherford. I'm asking them these questions, and it's reporting. And that's the reality. John Rutherford is running a Republican primary. So, you know, that's who Rutherford is speaking to. Rutherford is going to run in a safe Republican seat. That's also the reality. 70% of that district is Republican. So when we look at John Rutherford's electoral chances, you know, there's not some mythical Democrat that's going to jump up, get $4 million, and make a competitive race. Rutherford is going to win by 30 points in November against whoever he runs against. That's the reality. You know, and if I ask people questions, they give me answers. I'm telling you what they say. So it's not cheerleading the people. It's building relationships of trust where you get the information that you need. So we're not just speculating and not just going off what you read on the headlines of the Times Union or here on the TV. It's going a little bit deeper.
But over time, we do become part of the establishment when we're spending so much time with these political operatives. Even though you probably don't become friends with them, you do become friendly with them and on cordial terms. And it does at some point give off this perception of being with them instead of sort of this neutral intermediary between the public and the powerful people.
Well, I can't speak for anyone else on this panel, but what I can tell you is that I've managed to turn off and annoy every mayor that's been mayor since I started hosting this program. We actually are going to have Mayor Curry on Monday, the first time since his election. I see my role as to objectively cover these politicians and cover them without fear or favor. I can only speak for myself, though.
I hate everyone.
I'm with Larry.
Okay.
I think Claire's actually right here because, you know... If you look at a lot of people think that the too much of the media is in bed with the political establishment. I mean, there's no doubt that's what people think. I mean, people think we weren't aggressive enough when the Iraqi war was coming up, that we just kind of laid down and went with the flow there. You know, there's instance after instance after instance on national level and probably on the state level where that case can be made. It's a constant... It's a constant push-pull for a reporter to get close, but not too close. And you know, some do it well, and some step over the line and you know, and become part of the establishment.
Well, I break stories every day, and there's stories that, you know, often the administration does not want out, often councilmen don't want out, happens every day. And if you read me on floridapolitics.com, you will see those stories, up to 10 stories a day. Most of them original reporting you won't find anywhere else.
Yeah, and I mean, I've taken heat from politicians on both sides of the aisle and from people on both sides of the aisle for being biased. It's just a part of the job.
Nobody likes us. That's part of the job. It's nobody ever will.
I like you just fine, Larry. Say that right now.
My dog likes me.
let me also make note of the fact that we learned this week that the Jacksonville Planning Commission denied a request from a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans to raise a 70-foot-tall flagpole on Moncrief Road... On the city's northwest side, they told that group, no way.
Nobody. You don't want people driving down to Florida, going to Disney World, going through Jacksonville and seeing a 75-foot Confederate flag. It's not the image Jacksonville wants out there in the world.
Yeah, but just look at all the license plate and bumper stickers if you want to see Confederate flags in Jacksonville.
But is it legal?
Yeah, that's the question.
Well,
the city attorney doesn't think it is.
That is the deeper legal question. But we need to make, speaking of which, it's our collection of strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous stories from the week. Luckily, never shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Only in Florida is our electoral process constantly accused of being rigged. Yes, Republican frontrunner Donald Trump, the latest to hurl accusations against Florida's way of picking a president. Trump argues that Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush orchestrated the state's primary in an effort to prevent him, Trump, from getting votes. However, it was the Florida legislature in March 2015 who made the state's contest winner take all. And of course, Trump did win the primary. So the fact-checking organization PolitiFact is calling Trump's statement false.
Everybody hates Florida.
Most people hate PolitiFact.
Thanks to our media panel, Claire Goforth, Larry Hannon, John Burr, and A.G. Gankarski. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Politicians are not the only ones cooing babies. Chimpanzees also have to campaign.
One of the things that males do is tickle the babies of the females to show that they are nice with babies.
I'm Ira Flatow. On Science Friday, primatologist Franz DeWall joins us to talk about the intelligence of animals, including us. That's on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part 2. Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Welcome back. Well, today is Earth Day here in Jacksonville. Lots going on around town to mark the occasion, including a celebration at the Jacksonville Landing. Here's a way to protect the Earth. Bring all of your old electronics to a special location this weekend for a massive e-waste collection and recycling event. Stephanie Parker of Grasp Academy and Stephen Kaufman, CEO of Urban Mining, are here to tell us about it. Good morning to you both.
Good morning. Good morning.
And Grasp Academy is the new school in this area, set up in particular to help children with dyslexia. You're co-sponsoring?
Yes, we are. We're happy to be sponsoring an e-waste recycle drive with Urban Mining.
Yeah. And so, Stephen, you are collecting all manner of e-waste. What can people bring by for donation and collection?
They can bring by just about any type of electronic, you know, any device really with an electric cord and a plug, short of a toaster oven, we'll collect. The only item that we exclude are the old style CRT monitors that have that big tube in the back because of some of the requirements related to that.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, really excited to be working with GRASP and all of the children as part of the program and focus on environmentally safe ways to recycle electronics and sustainability.
And it's so important not to just throw this stuff out because all that does is pollute the environment and it pollute the groundwater eventually, right?
Really important not to throw it out and really important that when you recycle it, you do it with somebody that you know you can trust so that the material doesn't end up just being tossed if there's no value or being shipped out of the country.
And tell us a little bit about the Grasp Academy's role in this community and why you decided to get involved.
Well, Grasp Academy has, we're in our third year. We serve dyslexic students and students who are learn like a dyslexic mind would learn. We are a multi-sensory school, so our students benefit from hands-on project-based learning. And urban mining is providing our students a wonderful opportunity to learn hands-on, that once we collect all of these e-waste items, they are going to get to help tear down and learn how to, about precious metals and everything in the process of keeping all of these electronics and waste go into landfills.
Yeah, and so let's get all this information out to the public. This is happening Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 3101 Justina Road. Where is that exactly?
That is Grasp Academy. That is our
school.
Oh, that
is at Grasp Academy. Oh, okay. Yes. I'm so sorry. And e-waste includes, as we've been discussing, everything from cell phones, computers, laptops, printers, scanners, LCD monitors, wires, cables, VCRs, DVD players, gaming consoles, any battery-operated devices, GPS device, scrap metal, too,
scrap metal as well. And it's important that people know that anything that has a hard drive or a memory device will destroy at no charge, so they don't need to worry about data or data security.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Stephanie Parker of Grasp Academy, Stephen Kaufman, CEO of Urban Mining. Thanks for being with us again. This e-waste drive is Saturday and Sunday at 3101 Justina Road, the new Grasp Academy. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. Presidential frontrunners win big in the New York primary. Michigan's Attorney General files criminal charges against officials in Flint. And Harriet Tubman will replace Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill. Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Relax Radio WJCT 89.9 HD3 is your music station, playing the songs you remember best from the Beatles, Elvis, Frank Sinatra, Barbra Streisand, and Motown, 24 hours a day, only on WJCT 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax. Artists, would you like your photography, music, paintings, or poetry featured on WJCT? Submit your work to The Square, an online gallery and competition for local artists. Winners get a quality video produced by WJCT about their work. If you submitted during a past round, you can submit again. Share your work now at wjct.org/thesquare. Presented by WJCT and Grassroots Natural Market.
Welcome back. Well, it's a free family event this weekend. Wings and Wheels takes the runway at Craig Airport on Saturday. Debbie Jones from the Jacksonville Aviation Authority is here with a preview. And this is free, open to the public, lots of fun for kids. What's going to be happening, Debbie?
Well, thank you for having me this morning. Wings and Wheel 2016 will be happening this Saturday, tomorrow, at Jacksonville Executive at Craig Airport, JAXX. There'll be static aircraft displays, a classic car show, family kids zone, airplane rides, food, entertainment, just lots of activity for everybody in the family.
And aviation buffs will love this as well, because local flight instructors will take you up on a short flight if you want to pay a little bit of money, right?
Exactly. We have several flight schools, both at JAXX and from our Herlong Airport, who will offer plane rides, $35 per person, cash only, but we will have an ATM provided by Vistar Credit Union, and you can go up for a nice trip around the city downtown and enjoy aviation from that perspective. We're also going to have tours of the air traffic control tower, so you can get a bird's eye view of the activity without going higher than the air traffic control tower.
Right. And for people that have never been to Craig, I still call it Craig Field.
I know.
But it's the Jacksonville Executive Airport up along Atlantic Boulevard near St. John's Bluff is the basic area where it's located. It's an opportunity to come and check out this small but important local airport.
Exactly. It's our opportunity to open the fence and let the community come behind the gate, or open the gate and come behind the fence to see this asset for Jacksonville. Jacksonville Executive at Craig Airport, JaxX, has been with... it has been in this community since it was built in the during World War II, and it provides over $153 million in annual economic impact, over 1,000 jobs. And so this is our open house to bring the community in and let them see this wonderful asset in Jacksonville.
And it's wings and wheels, so not only the airplanes, but the classic car show is sure to draw lots of people, too.
That's exactly right. That's why there's something for everybody in the family, where you whether you love airplanes, you're a car buff. The Kid Zone will have a video game truck, which is something we've never had before. So I think the kids will enjoy that. There will also be fingerprinting offered. So if you need fingerprinting, if you ever, God forbid, have to have an amber or silver alert, the JFRD will be on site with that activity. So something that everybody in the family can enjoy.
She's Debbie Jones with the Jacksonville Aviation Authority. Again, this is free. We always like free events, right? It's Wings and Wheels tomorrow at Jacksonville Executive Airport. That's the former Craig Field. From 10 to 4 tomorrow, you've got classic cars, plane rides, live entertainment, food vendors, a kid zone, and more. Go on out and enjoy this beautiful weekend with Wings and Wheels. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And in a moment, the famed Gullah Geechee Ring Shouters will tell you where you can see them.
WJCT and Baptist Health are pleased to announce that Amy Robach, news anchor of ABC's Good Morning America, will be this year's afternoon keynote speaker at Girls' Day Out, September 17, 2016, Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Amy is also a breast cancer awareness advocate and author of My Breast Cancer Journey, From Fighter to Thriver. For more information or for tickets, log on to wjct.org/girlsdayout.
Folk, blues, jazz, R&B, country, western, Americana. It's all acoustic and it's all in one place. And that one place is String Theory, Friday nights at 11 p.m., only on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, the famed Gullah Geechee Ring Shouters perform in downtown Jacksonville tomorrow at Metropolitan Park, one of the world's top performing artists of the Geechee Gullah culture and all descendants of African slaves. The renowned Ring Shouters give us a window into the fascinating culture of these coastal communities in the Southeast. Derek Boyd Hankerson joins us in studio to tell us about the Ring Shouters. Good morning.
Good morning.
And on the line, Gullah Geechee Cultural Heritage Corridor Commissioner and Treasurer Griffin Lotson. Good morning, Griffin.
Good morning.
And a shout or a ring shout is a religious ritual first practiced by African slaves, and it has in particular become a hallmark of the Gullah Geechee culture of the Sea Islands, the Southeast Barrier Islands. When people come out to see this tomorrow, what will they be treated to?
Derek, you want me to chime in there?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, you're going to see the authentic version of how it was produced on the plantation. And this, in short, it's a form of a dance and singing, which others saw it during the plantation days, and they said it was named the shouting because it is a lot of noise there. So then it evolved into the ring shout. but the tradition started in Africa. The dance and the clap are from Africa. Most of the songs were birthed on the plantation with the newfound Christian religion that they adopted from their own original religion that they had in Africa.
Derek Boyd Hankerson, this is a rare opportunity to see something the people in Jacksonville might not always get the chance to see.
That's absolutely correct, Melissa. And what's really unique about this is April 1st, I believe it was, First Coast Magazine did a wonderful story, and they titled the story History as Song, and it was a story of the Gullah Geechee culture. I'm blessed to be a direct descendant, and you're absolutely correct in the sense that mm-hmm. not many people get an opportunity to see the ring shouters in person, and African-American sororities and fraternities are based in
right.
Gullah Geechee Ring Shouter. So here is a way for people to learn about the beginning of fraternities and sororities and what it means
wow.
to a specific slice of pie in American history, and that American history, which I'm specifically, and Griffin and others are specifically focused on, is the Gullah Geechee culture.
Right, and Griffin, it's a rich culture, and as Derek pointed out, it's influenced lots of other elements of our culture today.
Absolutely. You can think of any music form, as some think it's strange that they're celebrating Prince's death, Prince the famed singer.
Yeah.
But rhythm and blues, jazz, right on up to all of the modern music started on the plantation. Most historians say truly in America, this was probably the first real musical choreographer, because, of course, we came from England, the original planners, and they brought the England tradition. This was birthed in America on the plantation.
Well, it is going to be a rare opportunity. History is Song, the story of the Gullah Geechee. You can come out and see the Ring Shouters tomorrow at downtown Jacksonville's Metropolitan Park. And they'll be performing at what time?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock tomorrow. Thank you so much for being with us. Derek Boyd Hankerson and Griffin Lotson with us. The Ring Shouters tomorrow afternoon in downtown Jacksonville. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And as Griffin mentioned, so many of our modern stars took influence from music of the plantation era. And as he mentioned, one of them was Prince. Prince died last night. So much has already been said about the music legend already, so I'll keep my thoughts brief, but like so many millions of others, I loved Prince. I loved his strength, his independence, the way he beat the record industry for control of his songs. I loved his androgyny. I think the reason so many women responded to Prince was subconsciously because we appreciated the way he validated us with what historians and authors call the sacred feminine. Here was this clearly heterosexual male, but he boldly flaunted his own brand of wily, feline femininity in a way, with those gorgeous clothes and makeup and pompadours. But most of all, of course, I loved his songs. My friends and I wore out the Purple Rain LP when it came out, and we saw the movie over and over that summer of 1984. But we had all his earlier stuff, too, in our bedrooms, hidden away. The early albums like Controversy and Dirty Mind that our parents were horrified by. His sly cheekiness was irresistible. You know, there aren't a lot of true stars left. Magical, mysterious, transcendent performers that just leave you in awe. Prince was one of them, so enjoy the music and thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.